listening to The Couples Guide Podcast.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Talia.
We're both licensed marriage and family therapists, and today,
like every day,
we're debunking myths and delivering truth about dating, relationships, and everything in between.
Trust us.
It's awesome.
Episode 119. What am I going to consume today, Talia?
Relationship content.
Actually, I imagine you and I have very we have very different media diets, but probably. We both consume, I think, a lot of relational content, naturally, given what we enjoy. But you are much more savvy on the pop culture versions of that.
True. By proxy of being... by proxy of having my Instagram be part of like my business, I am more in the loop, whether I like it or not. And there's times that things that people are like, have you heard this? And I was like, I really wish I hadn't. Like, not till now. And I could have lived without knowing that for the rest of my days.
Yeah. You can't unsee it sometimes.
No, bummer. You can't unlearn it. And the Father Algorithm, as we call him as a joke, he definitely serves the content that you're searching for. Like, you know what's going on in your subconscious based on your explore page. So.
Yes. You mean all the dog videos that always pop up? Yes.
That's me. 100%. My work one is all like divorce, when to leave, relationships, attachment styles. And then my personal Instagram is like dogs. It's like all the stuff I talk about and like send and like pull from and do podcasts on for the work thing. And then privately, it's just like animals and babies. So good.
See, now if couples just got on the same page of only watching cute animal and baby videos, I think done. End of the podcast. That's it. That's the end of the episode. Do that. That's our one recommendation. Look at furry, cute things.
Yes,
exactly. Together. You're over it. Now, what are we actually talking about relationally wise for media dives? This is a cool idea that you noticed, something you've been seeing in your practice that you wanted to bring to the podcast.
So I'm seeing a lot more with my clients, both couples that I work with and individuals trying to become a couple or trying to date, that there's a disparity in the level of interest in or actual consumption of podcasts, Instagram articles, whatever it is, media related to bettering oneself, relationships, how to fight fairly, like all the topics that we discuss on this podcast and other relational-based podcasts that usually either one member of the couple has like the corner hold on it and they're the ones who are like the liaison of all the information, and then the other person is okay without it. It's not sometimes they are unwilling, but most of the time they're not unwilling to like read an article, but they're not going to take it upon themselves to delve in and do the research and, like we joked about, make their whole explore page all about relationships. So that's I've been seeing that a lot and have seen it probably really bud over the last year to 2 years, but really coming up the last 3 to 6 months, like right before I went on leave and coming back from leave, that it's like there's a huge influx of content creators and more available content on relationships, on this, sometimes coming from not trained professionals, which is a whole other episode that we could do. But today's episode is talking about whether you are the person who like wants to consume the data, or you're the person who is with the person who consumes the data. Like, how do you navigate this in a relationship? Because it does cause conflict and fighting, especially if they're like sending each other reels. I see that a lot too. But I'll take the mic back after your turn to discuss that.
Yeah, I just want to highlight that what you're talking about, what we're going to talk about today, is just when partners are different in how they choose to seek out these resources, and we're specifically like kind of framing it in that these are good resources that one partner is looking at. Because as you mentioned, there's other discussions about like, what is your media diet? And there's bad things you can be consuming. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a whole separate caveat of like, there's a lot of pop culture mental health diet out there that isn't useful.
Yeah.
So that'll be my one little disclaimer, is like, that's something to pay attention to. But we're talking about when you're listening to the Couples Guide podcast, to licensed therapists. You're reaching out to professionals in the field, in-depth discussions, not necessarily clickbait, whatever, opinions from someone who did 6 sessions in therapy. And which, I mean, great for them doing 6 sessions of therapy, but like, it's not,
the same thing as being a licensed professional.
Yeah. It's just not quite the same. So that, I just want to make sure, I just want to highlight that's the frame of this discussion and how to navigate that. And, you know, inherently the people listening to us talk about this right now are, you're probably the one in the relationship who has a high saturation of relationship topics in your media diet. And maybe, or maybe there's a couple listeners who are, again, are willing, as you said, because their partner said, hey, can you check this out? And now you're listening to us. So just want to talk about that dynamic, those differences, how to navigate that. And I'm probably going to share, like, you know, what I see in my office when one person starts leaning on that more than another partner, and how that can be conflictual. So yeah, that's just what I wanted to point out to make sure we're framing this clearly for everyone. Where do we start?
I think starting with when a couple, whether we, because most everybody, I shouldn't say that. A lot of the people that I've worked with have been single, but most everybody that I've worked with who's part of a couple, even if they're coming in individually and their partner's like a story, but they exist, there is a overlap, like Venn diagram of single people trying to get in a relationship, individuals who come in to see me who are in one, and couples who bring their relationship into the room, that like the center of this tri-circle Venn diagram is, I want to know myself more deeply so that my partner can know me more deeply. Like, I think that's at the core of all the overlap. And what that operationally looks like when the person has that desire could be consumption to overconsumption of relationship-based podcast, books, seeing reels or following social media pages, whether they are by licensed people or not. Some of the people who aren't still have good like questions to ask, like dating coaches or whatever else, not necessarily that I would only refer to them, but they ask certain questions that the individual who wants to know themselves better in order for the partner to know them better is like, oh my gosh, it sets this template that this exists. This kind of person exists, the type of guy who likes listening to podcasts, the type of girl who likes reading books about, like, it's this trope that this type of very self-aware individual exists, and why don't I have it? So it's like that center overlap Venn diagram can then become a source of a lot of disappointment and frustration that in the beginning, if we don't know whatever exists, we're not missing out on it. So we're not disappointed. We're not getting what we never knew existed. But in the other sense, it's okay, now that I know it exists, I'm seeing this guy or this girl post about what I wish my partner, whether they're imaginary or real, would do. Why can't I have that? And that's where I have to work with the couples that I see in my office who bring their relationship in and say, what feels important to you about your partner consuming what, at least what you send them, and what would be the dream come true if they took this upon themselves and started doing what you do? And those are the questions that we have to, I recommend that we have to start with, because it is such a needs and wants and emotional based desire. And I think that's where you're nodding that you see this too.
Definitely. I like looking at with couples or encouraging people listening, like, what is the underlying need or desire that one partner is turning to this material, and being able to share openly about that with the other person. I love that. Although there is one thing you said that I want to veer a little off. Sure. So if I need to, you know, pull me back if I'm too off, but one thing you said that caught my attention was, if someone is, you know, consuming all this media and seeing the posts and the discussions and hearing about how some other partners not theirs show up in a relationship and longing for that, I just want to say, like, that's one of the dangers of social media consumption and over consuming, but one of the things, like, need to be real intentional about, if you're someone who does want to learn skills, does want to get into this, like, making sure you're aware of the pitfall, the trap, the danger of now comparing your relationship to others.
And yeah,
I don't want to dive too deep into this, because again, it's not the real focus of this episode, but I do want to label that this is one of the things we see throughout social media consumption, right. No matter what the topic or issue is, there's major negative mental health effects of social media, because people look at that as reality. Everyone who's posting is exactly only what they post, when that's not true. And so, and then that has us having really negative feelings about ourselves, because we do the comparison bias. We start judging ourselves against content.
Yes.
And content isn't reality. And that, I want to loop that back to then, if you're looking at relational content, meaning make sure that if you're the one consuming that diet, you're putting it in the frame of, I'm looking to learn things, I'm getting information, not to compare myself to what I'm learning.
Right.
Or not to then judge my partner to these other aspects of information, because it's not a comparison of reality.
Right.
So just a little important danger thing. And then also to go, great, in that space of you want resources, you want knowledge, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Take that, but put it in its appropriate bucket, and be careful if you're starting to go, oh no, we are not like picture perfect disclosures of these Instagram accounts. Or on the flip side, oh no, we're hearing all these negative things, or I'm learning all these negative things, and that's what I do with my partner. Like if you take that down a rabbit hole, you're gonna do more harm to your relationship. If you take it with some curiosity and knowledge and go, great, I can learn some stuff and I can bring that to the relationship, awesome, you're on the right track. So just being intentional matters.
What you said, I think the differentiation is important, that it's not the overconsumption, it's like hyper consumption of a specific type of content. Same thing when like you're doing actual meal planning and dietary consumption and macros of like what you're eating. If you hyper focus on one of the macro or micronutrients, like keto diet, that's hyper focusing on fat and not focusing on carbs. When you're looking at like the keto diet of the relationship world, it's like only focusing on relationship content. And then like carbs is the smallest category. It'd be like puppies, babies, how to, cool history facts. Like there's so much information out there available for people. Be very mindful of how your quote unquote diet or consumption of certain media impacts your health. Same thing as your hyper consumption of certain foods impact your health. Like there's people who are gluten intolerant. They can't eat gluten. I love gluten. Yeah. Ryan is gluten intolerant. I might be, I don't know, but I'm going to power through it because I'm an Italian and I'm not going to let that stop me. Just like in college, when I got diagnosed with lactose intolerance, I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And I fought through it and I took pills. So there's a level of applying that same logic to the relationship media consumption. Don't overdo it. You're going to get sick of it. You're going to lose your flavor for it. And it's just like anybody who's starting a new diet, they tell everybody about it. Oh, this changed my life. This. And then eventually you burn out on it. Your partner might like, let's the gluten intolerance is a great example. Your partner might not be gluten intolerant in the sense of like, they need to consume the media that's about relationships. Let them be, let them have their own life. And if they don't consume it, that's where we need to go to of like, why does it bother you that you're alone in this journey? Why is it frustrating to you? Not discounting that it is, but why? I want to know why for the individual. Is it frustrating that they don't watch the reels, that they don't seem to take an interest? Really what it is they don't seem to take an interest in what you're interested in. And because we started with that, I'm interested in this because I'm developing myself better for a partner to know me better. The loose translation is they don't care about me. They're not interested in being interested in me. And that's where we need to separate, because for some couples, that's true. But for the majority, it's not. They're just like, that's not, I don't want to learn that. And that's why a lot of the women, I know it's stereotypic that I work with, are like, well, he can remember all of these golf scores and finals and baseball and this and that and whatever else, but he can't remember this thing I sent him or how important this is or what I want. And it's a different mindset that people get into. It's not that this person is incapable of doing what you're asking. It might be the method or the means by which you're asking that doesn't land for them. Maybe they don't want to be sent podcasts, or they don't want to be sent reels or what have you, but they'd be more than willing to hear about it if you talked about it over dinner, right? Like maybe it's the method of the delivery that's the problem, not necessarily the media itself for some couples, at least from what I've seen, that like they're not unwilling. It's just they don't prefer that method.
Yeah, two things I love you're saying is how one partner communicates this to the other really matters. And two, like it could just be like this is your hobby and not your partner's. And that might seem at first like that, wait, that doesn't make sense. We're both in this relationship. So how could it be just a hobby? I don't mean the relationship is a hobby.
No, no.
I mean, diving
into... That's my hobby. I just get into a new hobby.
I mean, diving into this in such detail that that might be something that's enjoyable for one partner and not the other. So like, let me work backwards on those two points. First of all, with the hobby idea. My partner crochets. She loves it. I do not. I will not crochet with her.
You don't
not
love crocheting?
Not my jam.
I love that she loves it.
Love that she does.
Yes.
And what that means is, so what's my role as mm-hmm. her partner? Mm-hmm.
In supporting this, yes.
In supporting that. Maybe it's to occasionally surprise her with some fancy yarn.
Yes.
To go, hey, surprise. I know it matters
surprise
to you.
For the hobby, yes.
There you go. Here you go. I know it matters to you. So every now and then I'll do that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean every week. That doesn't mean it's every top of my mind every day.
Right.
Just every now and then I go, this is important to you.
Yes.
I'm going to engage yes. and do it that way. I think most importantly, my role in that, her hobby, not mine, is when she is excited to talk about this new stitch she learned, or honestly, the most common is, check out the cute thing I just finished. Mm-hmm. I go... Awesome. So, can't wait to hear about it, and I can't wait to see it. Share me your joy about yes. this hobby you yeah. love. And I think when I put it in that frame, mm-hmm. that applies really well to relational media diet. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a great expectation I would encourage listeners to have of, if you really love diving into this to change, to grow, and work on your relationship, let that be your hobby and bring that to your partner. And I think an appropriate expectation would be, when you share this is important to me, can you engage with me when I bring it to you? The trap I see with couples is when the partner who's doing all of that reading and learning and watching
the labor,
starts yeah. getting resentful, like, yeah, but my partner doesn't do that. Well, they didn't sign up to crochet with
when
you.
When did they agree? If they yeah. did, when did they agree to do that? And most of the time, yeah. they didn't actually agree to it.
Oh, yeah. Because
fantasy,
it's just not how, as you said, they kind of clicked with that. So if you start having this expectation that just because you're both in a relationship, that you both engage with relational content the same way, or you think about relationships the same way, I think that's a recipe for building your own resentment, not honoring where your partner's at and what they like to do. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my point on the hobby example. I'll briefly talk about the other one because I feel like it's already a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah.
But on the idea that how you present it is, if you come in with that hobby mind frame and present, hey, this is important to, mm-hmm. to me, without a demand or request to do anything, or a blaming space of, hey, you never look at this stuff, or I asked you to do this, how come you didn't? Take it in the present moment and just say, hey, this is important to me. Can you let me know when you have some time and attention to
yes.
talk about these things that I've been enjoying?
Yes.
Maybe not tonight, but hey, oh, cool. You got some time tomorrow? Cool, sweet. I got this cool idea that I learned mm-hmm. about. So you making sure, like, if you like this diet and this works for you, this is your hobby, this is something that's fun for you or that is meaningful to you, bring it to your partner with collaboration, honor that they're different than you, and then see where this wonderful diet might benefit both of you. But you're not pushing that diet onto someone else. You're not forcing them to do something that's outside of their natural interest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I put those two.
What helps the most is the timing of it, like you're saying. A lot of couples come into conflict and by proxy feel disconnected because they asked or expected at the wrong time. And I don't mean wrong, like morally wrong, but like it just wasn't the most aligned time for the partner to be open to it. And this tone gets set when we're kids, because when we go to our parents, just like the adult version is like, hey, look what I crocheted. The kid version is like, look at this flip that I can do, you know, like when you're at the pool or whatever. And we have understandably this expectation as children, because our parents are everything for a lot of our childhood. They're like our whole, you know, they're this omniscient, omnipresent being of like, mommy and daddy are superheroes. We go to them. And we want that attunement, and we want them to be like, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Do it again, right? Like, we want someone to show interest in us. There's a remnant level of that still exists in our adult relationships. that we have to frame differently because it's about timing. There were many times as a kid, I'm sure we went to our parents with or without them saying it, and it wasn't the right time, but they put it out of their mind and they're like, no, my kid needs me. Whatever I'm doing doesn't have to be as important. Like, they want to show me this artwork. That's the appropriate answer, by the way, for those of you listening as parents, is being like, put your own stuff aside for 2 minutes, because that core memory that could be created for your child of like, whenever I went to my parents, even if they were busy, they always cared about my artwork. That really sets the tone. So in adulthood, we have to ask about timing, because we're both adults. Ideally, we're both autonomous individuals with our own lives, work, what have you. That has to be honored. That's the way to get that childhood level of fascination and attention, is by carving out that time so you know what version of your partner you're going to get. Because I, in my view, we don't necessarily have to interact with our partner in that way, that everything they do is the coolest thing ever all the time, and like drop anything for them. That's almost bordering on codependency. The healthier way to do it is like you're saying, hey, when this is your hobby, especially, I listened to the coolest podcast earlier. I'm jazzed about it, and like, show the passion. I'd love to share it with you. Could you share me a good time that I can just like tell you what I was excited to learn? Is so different than sending them the podcast, sometimes without context. And then the person's like, so did you listen? And the partner's like, no, I had 900 other things going on today. Sorry. Like, this is not my hobby, like you're saying. And they're like, understandably feeling hurt, because it's like, hey, I made a bid for connection and you turned against it. So if you're going to send it, at least give context. Or better yet, if your partner's the one that's like, just update me, then vocalize, hey, when do you have time for me to share this with you? I'm so excited about it. And you don't have to include chronological time, but sometimes it helps to be like, I literally just want 5 minutes to like, wow, like just tell you how cool this thing is. Then your partner's like, oh, I could fit that in right now. Or they might say, can you give me 20? That's the adult version of the, I want to see your art project.
Yeah. I'm sure we talk about this a bunch, but like, I don't know how many times I hear in session the challenge of couples where one partner is so excited to want to talk about a relational thing or practice like something we've been doing in session together. And the second that, you know, say both partners come back from work, the second they like see each other, that partner who's excited jumps into it. And what I hear all the time is the other partner going like, I just got back from work.
Literally just got home. Yeah.
And
a blink.
And like, I just wanted to like get out of my jeans.
Yes.
I wanted to put on some jammies.
Transition. Yeah.
Just not talk to anyone for a while, for a second. Like, yeah. Don't even need that long. Just like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And so that's a good example. You're talking about like, you know, we talk about picking your time and being honoring about that, that when you look at this idea that, cool, you might be the one consuming this wonderful relational media diet,
yeah,
learning great things, getting excited. Remember that that's your hobby. You enjoy that. And then pick a time to check in with your partner. Because here's the common pushback I hear from people, the partners who don't consume that and they're still willing to engage, but at the same time, it's not their jam. As I say with the hobby idea, like, it can make sense to go like, well, but you're in relationship, right? So you are crocheting with me. Wink, mm-hmm. Wink. Yeah, but it's more complicated than that. Everyone has their own thoughts and feelings about relationship. And for the people who are into this diet, it's just fun and enjoyable and can talk about forever. For those who aren't, the reason they're more into golf than this is because it's a lot of work and energy,
yeah,
to focus on relationship.
True.
And so we got to honor those people who aren't naturally drawn to, say, our podcast, that it's a lot of work to do that. It's a lot of emotional labor to sit and start thinking about all this relational stuff that's not necessarily natural to them. And that doesn't mean it's someone who is just unwilling to engage or someone who doesn't care about you when you bring it to them. It's you're asking more. You are potentially asking more of them than you realize. Or it's a lot more effort for them because it's not their passion than it is for you. So I wanted to really always honor that piece of, hey, I know this isn't your jam. Thank you for doing it. I know you're not, yeah, into crochet. Thank you for always, you know, caring that it's important to me. I know it's a lot more work for you to focus on crocheting than it is for me, because I just get joy out of it. And for you, it's a chore. Mm-hmm. So being able to acknowledge the different labor it takes to focus on relationship and also appreciate your partner who it's not their jam, but they do it because they care about you. Mm-hmm. Focus on those moments of when they do, not all the times that you wish they did. Build up that positive attunement and appreciation for the work that your partner does do.
And if to speak on the hobby topic, because there are certain hobbies that are, I guess, like deal breakers in relationships, you could say, like if a partner does or does not have a specific hobby, that could be for the individual, like, well, I want to be with pickleball is a very trending thing and has been for a while, from what I know.
I need a partner who plays pickleball with me now.
That might be,
but it could be thing,
right. That might be your hobby that you're like, and it's because everything the hobby represents. I met friends there. I was able to travel because of it. I met a new part of myself. Like, hobbies really do bring out ideally the best in us. I mean, some people have like negative coping skills as hobby, like drinking or whatever else. We're not talking about those. We're talking about like the growth forward hobbies. Yes. You want to find somebody who has hobbies in common with you at best, at minimum, that, like you said, they support your hobby. They love that you love it. So they keep that in mind, or they know that like Fridays at 7, you have a really important game. So if they had a tough day at work, they should wait till Saturday morning to bring something up so that you go play pickleball. Like, you want to find somebody who likes the hobbies you like. And so if the relationship media diet is important to you and you want a partner who's on the same diet as you or the same meal plan, and you want somebody who listens to podcasts and the reels and all of that other stuff, just know that with that comes you being with yourself. Like, you're going to be with another version of yourself that they're going to send you stuff that you now have to listen to, and you now have to carve out time for, and you now have to take into account of like, oh, they sent me this because they want me to do this. And that's a lot of the work I do with couples and individuals that I'm like, I don't know if you really want what you say you want, and I'm not discounting the desire, but let's really play this out. Would you want to date someone, or would it still be fun to be in a relationship with somebody who has the same hobby as you, or would it be too inundating? Would it be like annoying to have to hear about it all the time? And that's a per person answer. Some couples are like,
no right or wrong,
would love it. And some are like, oh my God, I never realized that. I'm like, cause right now the play space is you send, they receive. And you want them to just consume what you give, but there's no play space for them giving for you to consume and receive. And then they're like, oh, I forgot about that. Like, it has to go. It would be able to go both ways if you're really wanting. So it's really the deep desire to be known and cared for and to be understood that I think is truly prevalent. That's why the hobby exists, because it's like, this hobby gets me closer to that, and it might get my partner closer to it also.
And I do want to lean onto this. I said that because while this conversation is about when there's differences in those interests of diet, like, it is totally fine if you know it's really important to you to have a partner who shares this type of media diet with you. Just like on the hobby analogy, I think it's fine to like, hey, when I'm dating or when I'm with someone, I really want someone who is interested in active hobbies versus, oh, I want someone who's a gamer.
Right.
Like Ryan. I'm a huge gamer. So it's like, yeah, I love someone who plays games with me. So it's okay to say this is important.
Right.
But let's do that with some ownership, like you're saying. Let's be real about, do I really want a partner who's in that space with me? And then also remember that with the hobby analogy, but even with this idea of diet, what really matters in a relationship are shared values. And not necessarily the same interests.
Correct.
So that's where I think some of what I'm talking about of how you turn to someone or remember it's your hobby, not theirs. I'm looking more at, do you have a shared value of caring about what the other person is interested in? So it's less about my partner needs to be eating what I'm eating on this media diet. More about, I'm going to take responsibility for this matters to me. Does my partner share the value that when I turn to them and ask for them to engage with me in this thing I care about, will they show up for me?
Right.
But you have to define how that is in a value way, not in a behavior way. Mm-hmm. If you put it too rigid in behaviors, well, showing up to me is you've listen to the podcast, you've researched your own 3 articles, you've come to the table with your own thesis and new ideas. Mm-hmm. okay, that's a behavior
that's rigidity
you're looking for.
Yeah.
Really rigid.
Yeah.
Versus if the general value is, well, I want my partner to engage with me on something important, then you can share that, go to those longings that you're correctly identifying, and then give space for your partner to express that value in their way. If yours is consuming the media diet, mm-hmm. then look for how your partner expresses that value of connecting with you. That could be very different. Maybe not listening to the podcast or coming with thesis, but sitting with you and going, all right, cool. I am totally available to listen to the cool ideas you're excited about. Let's talk about them now over dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at the value as a big picture thing, not the which is allows for a lot more fluidity, agility, and collaboration, mm-hmm. not such a rigid behavior approach.
Yeah.
You need to do X, Y, or Z, and then you have a rigid boundary between you and
it
your
only counts if it's done in this way is much different than here's what I'm after. I'm open to possibilities of how it gets done. And as somebody I take ownership who is, I would say, more rigid than flexible on some things. And now, especially with a child, the amount of things that I like stronghold still stay rigid on, because it's like my last grasp of control and hope is like, I get the rigidity. I am the rigid person too, that it's like, I don't feel safe when it's too flowy or too fluid, or I don't believe that you're actually going to show up and show me in other ways, or in the past I've been burned, so it's hard to trust again. Like, there's a lot, and this could be a whole other episode, that this is my end note to this one. There are so many other reasons why it could feel unsafe, or like, oh my gosh, what if they don't? That is also good material to explore in couples therapy or individual therapy. Like, if you give your partner or the person you're dating the space to show you they know you, they understand you, they care for you, and they are interested in you, and you open your eyes to all the ways they could do it instead of being rigid on how you would do it if it were you, or how you think it should be done because of the media you're consuming, what would that look like? Could that be safe for you? Could you work through that? Could you be okay with that gap between, like, here's what I want, and the other person has heard it and received it, and then there's space between what they give you? And that's the vulnerable dance of, like, allowing your partner to show you they know you in their way rather than in the way that you know how to do it. So that could be, again, a whole other episode, but especially with the media diet piece of it, don't be so rigid that it's like, well, I sent you this reel and you should have known to do it that way because I wrote you that this is exactly how I want it. Like, that's a guidepost. Your partner might be like, no, like, it's a request, not a demand. They're not your employee. Like, they don't have to comply with you or they're going to get fired. I mean, I guess you can break up with them, but like, people are allowed to have their own way of doing things. So be more mindful of, like, it's about the message to me. It's about why it's important, not necessarily the method of delivery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my last thing, it's kind of a new idea. So I don't love wrapping with a big new idea, but I still think it's important to shout out briefly, like, inherently, when a partner is engaging with a lot of this diet, it means like they value change, they value getting better, they value learning. I happen to value those things too. But there's an also important thing that I value, that I balance with those things all the time, which is acceptance. When we lean too far into needing change or something different, it actually tends to make things fester and turn into shameful places and make it worse. Mm-hmm. So always wanting to have the balance of, yes, I value learning and getting better, but making sure I'm not crossing the line into pressuring myself or shaming myself that I'm not good enough, or, and then here's the relational piece, putting that on our partner.
Right.
And so always want to be, when you're looking at your media diet and how it differs from your partner, leaning into acceptance as well as the value of growth. Because change does not necessarily equal healing. And there's a lot of differences in what you can get in relationship depending upon where you focus. So just this discussion, I love. Part of it, though, is about managing that balance of, are you looking for change versus growth versus healing? And acceptance oftentimes can be more impactful than a focus on change.
Right.
To allow growth to happen in a relationship.
Right.
That's a lot of vague stuff at the end, but still, I just want to throw it out there. Like, when we're looking at these media diets, it's also important to remember, like, to accept yourself and your partner and your relationship for how they are. That actually can be some of the best ways to bring connection between people. So
I agree.
my little last side note of takeaways. Don't forget to accept each other for who you are and your differences, please.
No, I think I'm going to control you into being the way I want you to be.
Okay. Thanks, Talia. Thanks.
And then we'll see you all next time we meet. So look at that.
and then that'll be it. And I'll do exactly what Talia tells me next episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening today. If you have any questions for us or topics you want us to answer on the podcast, shoot us an email, ryanandtalia@thecouplesguidepodcast.com.
And thank you. And we will see you in a couple weeks.
Take good care.